You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the program is presented by the Barley House. The road to the White House begins at the Barley House, home of America's best burger, and WKXL's Pints and Politics series, which is presented by New England College. You can check out past episodes of our Pints and Politics Road to the White House series at our website, nhtalkradio.com. We heard from Andrew Yang earlier today on the program. Pete Buttigieg will be on the show on Friday. And it's been a remarkable theme during the course of this campaign that we have seen the campaign trail littered with the carcasses of successful governors, senators, members of Congress, mostly white males. And you have Buttigieg and Yang and Tulsi Gabbard, Tom Steyer, all these individuals that were kind of coming into this as the longest of long shots are still around, some thriving, going to be on the debate stage, and others are drifting to the wayside. Welcome right now Taylor Caswell, who is New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner, for our focus on New Hampshire economy, and who is desperately hoping that I am not transitioning into political punditry for him. And you are, your wish is going to be granted. We're not going to have you do
it's
any.
It's a good break for you, Chris.
Yeah, it's a good break. I'm weaning myself off, as you can tell.
Yeah, good.
I want to start with the executive order in regards to wind. And you know, one of the main Democratic points that have been made against Chris Sununu is that he has not been willing to diversify the energy economy here in New Hampshire, and pointed to, obviously, you know, vetoes in regards to biomass and other renewable projects that he has not supported. So what were your takeaways from this, and why is this project different?
Well, this is the offshore wind project, which really is the beginnings of a whole new industry more than it is a project. We're talking about a substantial investment of private resources to build many, many megawatts worth of electric wind generation in federal waters in the Gulf of Maine. Now, you don't just go out there and do that. You have to have a long process to take into account a whole host of different things, not the least of which are the fisheries in that region out on the Grand Banks. You've got environmental issues. You've got shipping issues. You've got a whole host of different things that need to be reviewed. And so last January, Governor Sununu asked the federal government to establish a task force that would go through that process of identifying how you would go about putting these sorts of facilities offshore. And they came back and said we wanted to do that on a regional basis. So now it's now December, and we're going to have the first meeting of the federal task force on the 12th, I think that's next week, with Massachusetts and with Maine. These are not going to be regular meetings, but I think they're probably going to be annually or biannually because the size of these task forces. But there's two things to take away from that. One is the governor really wants to be very transparent about this process. It's a long window of time. You're talking 5 to 7 years before anything really gets rocking. So there's plenty of time for people to get involved. There's plenty of time for all the voices to be heard to address this issue and address the cost issue ultimately. I mean, that's what we're really after, is trying to find new ways to generate electricity. So there'll be hearings. There's a meeting, I think, later this week in Seabrook for people to learn more about what this process is going to be like, and then the first meeting on the 12th. The executive order, sorry to go on, Chris. I'm doing my Chris Ryan impression.
I was just going to say that.
The executive order that got issued yesterday is to formally assemble a group of industry experts and others to start thinking about the New Hampshire-specific benefits from this initiative and this new industry, and to start planning for that now with plenty of lead time. So that's what he's done. He asked for the task force, and now he's got this executive order that just came out.
How do you evaluate, and again, this is kind of outside your realm, but there's been a lot of your discussion about wind projects that have taken place before, and Dean Spilett talks about this a lot and is focused a lot on energy issues. And it's taken a long time for them to come to fruition, as you're referencing this project, Will. But there's also been question about how successful they have been in wind farms in Leominster and other places in the state. So do you view wind as being successful? And I assume that this would be a much larger scale project than having, you know, 10 or 15 wind turbines on hills or mountaintops.
Well, that's exactly it. The turbines that are on land, and I don't know specifically the Leominster project or some of the others in New Hampshire, how big each of those turbines are, but I'm going to guess they're in the 1 to 2 megawatt range. The turbines that we're talking about being put offshore are far larger than that. They're anywhere between 15 and 17 megawatts each. They're a lot bigger, but they're offshore and they're in federal waters, which is, I think, 12 or 13 miles offshore. You wouldn't really even see them from the coast. And when you're able to have that open space to put those in, you're talking about potential power generation approaching a gigawatt or more. And for scale, you know, Seabrook nuclear station is 1,200 megawatts.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a much different scenario.
So it's basically putting in a new power plant.
Yes, basically. Right. Well, several, actually.
Several, okay.
And the scale is what the difference is, and the scale is beneficial not just to the amount of power that it throws off, but also to the ability for large investors and large companies that do offshore wind development to get into the game and to actually make money off this without this whole, you know, large public subsidy that has been part of the issue that the governor has repeatedly raised.
So, in your view, how significant is energy costs to, and I assume this is your kind of piece here, is that energy costs are hugely problematic to development in the state, and has been a hurdle for many, many years. There's been discussion of various projects, some of which have continued to be discussed, some of which are not coming to fruition. How important is it to be proactive on this issue?
Well, I mean, it's obviously very important to be proactive. It's a huge cost differentiator between not just New Hampshire, but the entire region. The entire northeastern United States has some of the highest electric rates in the country, as does the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington. So, you know, it's a regional issue, and here we are trying to address this issue from a regional standpoint. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's an interesting set of circumstances on this issue because it remains obviously a concern. It's a cost that businesses have to incur. But at the same time, the result has been we're not seeing a lot of real big, heavy industry moving
right
into this region or into New Hampshire as a result of that cost. If you're going to be, you know, melting metal or anything that involves a huge amount of electricity, you're probably not going to be considering either of the coasts at this point.
Right.
But if you're doing other things, like we're seeing here in New Hampshire now in the tech industry and advanced manufacturing, which is a little less cost compared to heavy industry, for the electric piece, and you're looking at workforce and so on, this is where you're really going to spend some time looking. So the market is kind of adjusting itself to some extent. I'm not trying to get away from the issue. I think we do need to deal with it, and I do think this is the most effective policy option we have right now is a large-scale offshore wind development of that industry.
Yeah, and certainly I think there's needs to be more discussion and a more detailed look at what's going to take place, but certainly in theory it makes a tremendous amount of sense, and being proactive on this issue is important, and also thinking outside of the traditional realm. We've talked about batteries and how significant that can be for rural areas in the state, but utilizing what there is in terms of an asset, and that is a lot of ocean and space offshore. And I think that this type of project, again, in theory, makes perfect sense because it utilizes what we do have in terms of resources. And we don't have oil, and there's obviously been discussion about fracking and things of that nature as well. But we don't have that, but we do have an abundance of space offshore. And in that realm, it seems to make perfect sense.
And an important point there, too, is that we do not, in New Hampshire or really in New England, have the ability to generate any of those fuels that you just know. So we have to import all of it.
Right.
Here, again, is an opportunity to generate this electricity at a scale we've never seen before,
yeah,
very, very locally, taking advantage of, I mean, studies that they've done, the industry and science, scientists have done, show that that area in the Gulf of Maine is some of the windiest ocean area on the planet.
Yeah.
And to have that ability, take advantage of that, to generate this without any emissions, without any sort of air impact on, other than slowing down the wind maybe on the backside of them, it's a real opportunity, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the three areas that you think of, wind offshore, wood, we have an abundance of that, and also solar, with a lot of open space opportunities, you know, in landfills and other places, as Concord is looking at that. So those three areas seem to be ones that we really need to look at. I've been pleased to see that there has been a proactive nature to this. And, you know, initially it was, oh, we need another pipeline. And, you know, we should look at the Northern Pass project, look at other projects. But I think, again, an all of the above type of approach to bring down energy costs is what's needed. And it takes a long time for these things to, to come to fruition. Everything seems to take a long time in government to come to fruition. And this is certainly one of those things. Taylor Caswell joins us here on the program, Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner here on the Hampshire Now Show. This hour of the program presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the program brought to you by the Barley House. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio. We experienced a lot of snow here in the Granite State on Monday and Tuesday, even more snow down in Boston. And that is real good news for the ski areas here in New Hampshire, which themselves did not experience a tremendous amount of snow. But to me, like, it's even more important for the ski industry, for there to be snow in Massachusetts and in the southern part of New Hampshire, mm-hmm, than it is for there to be snow up there.
Yep.
Because there is this weird thing called the human psyche. And if you see it snowing around you, you start to think about going skiing more if you're they're not the avid skier.
Right. No, totally true. And you can see our friends in the ski industry are taking full advantage of this opportunity to really kick off the season. Several have been open for a couple of weeks now. You were skiing at Cannon, understand.
Yeah, Sunday.
And the snow's pretty good there, right? I mean,
Cannon was amazing on Sunday.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've had plenty of snow. They're making it like crazy. It's always good to have some powder days. But this is like an advertisement for our ski industry. That plus the Killington race that occurred. I know that was in Vermont, but that's national coverage on NBC of a women's World Cup race, which Michaela Schifrin won on Sunday in the slalom by like 2 seconds. She crushed everybody as usual.
Yeah.
But that is a great advertisement on a national scale for New England ski areas. Snow in Boston is something. It's like if there's no snow in your backyard, you're like, oh, there can't possibly be snow in the North Country of New Hampshire, which is usually not the case.
Right. Yeah, the conditions up there were great, and the snow was all on the trees, frozen in, and we're looking forward to going up to Santa's Village on Sunday and doing the show up there for Monday with Santa himself. So we'll be back up in the North Country of New Hampshire, which is magical this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, Santa's not jumping in the presidential race, is he?
He might. he's got a lot of money, apparently, if he can...
Yeah, but that's a good time.
Is he an American citizen?
That's a good question.
Trump would beat him alive.
Ask him that question.
Yeah.
See your passport, citizen. Santa.
Where were you born?
But Santa's Village is really this time of year with the snow, and now here we are coming into Christmas on the downslope. What are we, 2-3 weeks from Christmas?
Yeah.
So great time to go up, do some skiing, check out Santa's Village, maybe stop in one of our fine breweries in the North Country.
I was going to transition into that. Yesterday, Jay Lucas joins us each Tuesday on the program. We talk about rural economic development and some of the projects that he's involved in. And one of the things we were talking about is there was an article, I don't know if it was in the Wall Street Journal, I forget exactly where I saw it, but it was about the death of the neighborhood pub. And to me, that is the neighborhood pub, the coffee shop are so integral, or brew pub, to the revitalization of these downtowns and also to the death of the downtowns. Having that gathering place where individuals come and have a sense of community. And he was talking about the Salt Hill Pub in Newport and how that has been a big change for them, and having that there. And to me, that is one of the, you know, if you're looking for a blueprint of what a Main Street should look like, and there's been a lot of discussion about Penacook here in Concord and putting in, the development off of exit 17. To me, like, a downtown needs a bar. It needs a coffee shop. And it needs that kind of togetherness, mm-hmm. where people come to the downtown. And that's the really, you know, is a centerpiece of any small town in New Hampshire.
I think it's that last point that's the most important and probably the most overlooked piece is in a world that's increasingly digital, increasingly online, where everyone's in Facebook groups and, you know, on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram and all these other places, having a place where you can gather and have face-to-face or have a sense of community, I think is at the heart of why these places are so successful. Now, I've been to plenty of coffee and brewery places around the state and in other states where the product isn't that good.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. The coffee's not that great. The beer's not that great.
But yeah. It tastes pretty good,
right?
Because you're in there with a bunch of people. Right. You're in there with people you know. You strike up conversations. And there's a huge appeal to that. And in small towns that are trying to revitalize themselves, it's exactly what they need. And that's, I think, why we see this connection between these sorts of places and revitalization. Even if it's a neighborhood rather than an entire town, it has that level of impact. And I think when we talk about economic development and we talk about all the numbers and the data and how we're trying to drive this and this and these outcomes, these sorts of intangible, subjective components to the development and what we have in New Hampshire is what is our real asset.
Do you feel that there is a need, or do you advocate or will advocate for some sort of perhaps a grant to small businesses that are looking to open up in small towns or on Main Street? Or is that strictly a local type of a thing? Because most of these types of businesses, you know, lose money. Most businesses, small businesses, lose money for the first 5 years. And these types of things, particularly where you're taking a huge chance, a lot of small towns, they don't, you know, developers or a small business entrepreneur doesn't want to take that type of chance. Is there any ways that you think that, perhaps the state could do a better job incentivizing them?
Well, I mean, when you start to talk about entrepreneurship generally, I think we can do a lot better than what we're doing right now. I'm not always one to say that the answer is in incentives.
Right.
I think that the answer is creating opportunity to access markets and to opportunity to access markets, not just for building something like manufacturing, but also markets to have people come to retail or to service-oriented places. And the types of training and the types of opportunities that can enable that are what we need to do. On the entrepreneurship side, you know, we have some programs around the state that can help. The Small Business Development Center does a good job with training programs, but we really need to have more access to capital. And I'm telling you that when we start getting into small business and entrepreneurship, honestly, the last people you want choosing which ones are going to do well is the government.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, to the extent that we can incentivize more private investment in these startups at all levels, that's the kind of approach that I would prefer to see, and something that we really need to spend some more time integrating into these broader strategies.
Taylor, it's always great to see you.
Good to see you too, Chris.
That is New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner Taylor Caswell joining us here on New Hampshire Now. 139, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. This segment of the show brought to you by the Barley House. And this hour of the program brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. Brian Shackman from New England Cable News is next.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.